You're listening to TCRG to CEO Radio with your host, Courtney J., TCRG.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of TCRG to CEO Radio. It's your host, Courtney, and I am so excited to have you here yet again. I have a couple little housekeeping things to go into before we start today's episode, which brings Lauren Carol Bolger back to the podcast in 2024. And I put her look back episode on last week so everyone would get a chance to know her and listen to her story so that by the time today's episode came out, you would be fully up to date and ready for all the fun and exciting things that she's been up to and all of the great work she's been doing. I'm really excited for you to hear how things are going 5 years on. We are still going to do a little bit of research into a live show or some type of TCRG to CEO radio gathering at the 2024 North American Irish Dance Championships in Grapevine, Texas. So stay tuned for that. One of the challenges I think that's come up is, you know, we all know that the nationals can often have really long days and kind of finding a time is a little bit challenging without some type of like, I don't know, more detailed schedule because we have our daily schedule. We kind of know what days, you know, are busy or not busy for us individually, but maybe trying to book a venue or some type of space at a certain time is a little bit challenging at the moment. So I will circle back to that after the World Championships. If you will be in Glasgow, feel free to say hi. I love meeting people that listen to the show and getting your ideas and, you know, hearing what episodes you loved. I will be there pretty much all week. I'll be there from Sunday to Friday. So feel free to say hi. I would love to meet you. And I do think that this is going to be the last episode of this season, so to speak. I've been going really strong since the fall of 2023, and with St. Patrick's Day and March and Worlds coming up, I think it's a good time to just take a little recess. I have a couple of people that I have lined up and also people that I just want to talk to. They're on my pending list, and I want to continue to bring you great content in the spring of 2024. So if everyone wants to catch up on any episodes that you didn't get to listen to from this season, or if you want to go back to the archives, there's a lot of episodes up now and you could get your TCRG to CEO radio fix even while the show is on break. So before we get into Lauren's episode, we have another question of the week. And this one came in through Instagram and it's a question about transfer students. So I will read the question and then give you my thoughts. I'm curious about transfers from a teacher's perspective, like accepting transfers and how it affects relationships with other dance teachers, how to prevent conflict with other teachers, also how to deal with the hurt of having kids transfer out. There's so much taboo around transfers, but no one really talks about how it affects teachers. So I think this is obviously going to vary a lot from person to person. So I will share my experience. I didn't get started on a great foot with my like surrounding community because at the time I started teaching, all of our local area schools kind of had like an agreement that they weren't going to take transfers from each other's schools. And some of them still do that. Some of them have since opened up to transfers. You know, I can't say it's because I decided to, but I don't know. Maybe it broke kind of the traditional way of doing things. And I did that for one main reason, and it's because not everyone has the means or resources or parent support to travel a really long distance away for class if their current school isn't suiting them for whatever reason. So when we were kids, you know, we knew there were other schools around or nearby, but we knew that they wouldn't ever allow us to dance there, even if we wanted to. And when people did want to find another option for whatever reason, it meant driving an hour or more to schools that were more competitive and further away. And I just felt like that was always kind of unfair. Like it feels like you're kind of holding people hostage because there's lots of reasons why a school wouldn't work out for a particular dancer. And to me, it was important to give people that option. So I started accepting transfers immediately. I was also just off of my last World Championships. I was really excited about working with dancers of all different levels, including the beginners that I had from the start. But I think it helped keep my skills fresh to kind of have, you know, prize winner dancers and novice dancers and champ dancers. And by that, I mean kind of like prelims were kind of the ones that were coming in at the start. And they were excited to have someone, just a new option nearby that would have otherwise not been there. So I know some teachers, you know, don't take transfers for the kind of not wanting to kind of step on each other's toes or not wanting to like hurt each other's feelings. But I think, again, it's really personal. It also probably depends on the history of your area and how, you know, everyone's personal histories commingle and overlap and, you know, sort of the respect to each other sort of thing. But as a teacher, I see transferring as not this big, huge thing. Nicole McKeever gave really interesting perspective on her episode about how in Irish dancing, we uniquely can have the same teacher from childhood all the way up through like adulthood or beyond. And I agree that that's super, super cool. And it's every teacher's dream, right? But at the same time, we can't necessarily expect that that's going to happen because, again, at different times in your life, you might need something that a teacher that you currently have can't provide for you, or it might not be a good fit for, you know, one reason or another, or different challenges in a dancer's family might come up that make another school a different, you know, a better option at the time. So I personally can separate my feelings versus my like logic in that situation. And of course, it's always going to be like, oh, like I'm really sad to see them go if someone does want to transfer out. But at the same time, I think it gives a good opportunity for some reflection. And that reflection would be, you know, did I do everything that I could for this student? You know, yes or no. Did this student want something from me that I could realistically provide? Yes or no. And then if you aren't happy with the answers to the questions you're asking yourself, then it can maybe spark some change for you in the future. But if you are at peace with what you were able to provide and what you did for that student, then I don't see a reason to really get that bent out of shape about it because they need something different and there's nothing wrong with that. So I am very like pro dancers being able to transfer if they want to. And of course, there's lots of outlier situations, you know, where maybe you have a really, really overzealous, you know, family or dancer or parent. And sometimes letting them go can be a relief, actually. And I think, your relationship with that student after they've gone really depends on what it was in the first place. If they leave on really good terms with you, you know, thanking you for what you were able to do for them and, you know, saying what they need in the future and you're leaving, you know, really happy to see them kind of move on to that next phase, then nothing would change when you see them out and about, you know, at a FESH or wherever in the future. And at the same time, if someone left on really bad terms, if someone, you know, kind of just said, you know, hey, you sucked and I hate you and I'm leaving, then you're probably not going to like be warm and fuzzy to them out and about. I don't know. I don't think that's like a leap, but again, I think it totally depends on what your relationship was with them and kind of how they were able to move on. And I've certainly had scenarios of both where, you know, we have a student who like regularly just, you know, talks about how happy they are for, you know, everyone, all their friends that are still with us and, you know, cheers them on and we see them out and about and things are, you know, awesome. You know, it's the same. They just don't dance here anymore. And then we have students where like it didn't end great for one reason or another. And, you know, everyone's cordial, but like no one's really like going out of their way to be like hanging out. You know what I mean? So I guess And the last part of this question is a little hard to answer because it's how you kind of handle the interactions with other teachers and how to prevent conflict. I don't know that you can really prevent conflict other than, you know, making sure that other teachers can, you know, get the full story from you if and when they ask. Like, I personally feel like the onus is on the dancer to like let their teacher know that they are moving on. And I encourage dancers to talk to their teacher before they make the decision to transfer about like, have you had an open and honest conversation with your teacher about what you need and what you're asking for, and if they're able to provide that for you. And then if those things have happened and over time nothing has changed and they still feel strongly about wanting to try something different, then I fully believe the dancer really needs to talk to their teacher about that decision that they've made. I would never want to just send a teacher a transfer notice and have them be blindsided that a student that they've grown and nurtured has essentially just moved on and never told them. So I don't know. For me, I would definitely have less conflict with other people if I felt like the student had come to me first, and at least even if they didn't want to have a big conversation, at least told me that, you know, they've decided to move on for whatever reason. So I think that wraps up our question of the week. We're going to head into Lauren Carol Bolger's update for 2024. And like I said, this will be the last episode for this season, quote unquote. And I'd like to pick things up again in mid-April, which will give you a few weeks to catch up. So download some episodes for your flight to Glasgow and keep listening on your commute. And we will see you in a few weeks. All right. Today on the show, we're bringing back a previous guest. This is Lauren Carol Bolger. Welcome, Lauren.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be back to talk.
Yeah. Thanks for coming back. I mean, Lauren has her hands full. She did in the first episode, and they have only become fuller. So, Lauren, if listeners haven't had a chance to listen to your previous episode, tell us who you are and how Irish dancing came into your life and how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, so currently, just talking about Hansel, so I'm in TCRG. I reside in the Seattle, Washington area. I grew up in Spokane. But outside of teaching dance, I actually have a full-time position. I actually work at a zoo now, which is in kind of the museum field. So I always like to say that zoos are like museums, just that the collection is living rather than inanimate objects. But it's a fun place to work. So I have school that I run, which is the Carol Henderson School of Irish Dancing. I work at the zoo. And then just last year I had my daughter. So I have a little baby girl named Saoirse. So yeah, I have a lot happening in my life. It's very fun, but Irish dancing's always been a part of my life. I started dancing when I was about 7. My mom actually taught me my first moves, which is, I think, kind of unique sometimes. And she wasn't an Irish dancer like growing up or anything either. So she actually just saw an ad in the local newspaper for Irish dance classes. I, at the time, wanted to do ballet because I saw Mary-Kate and Ashley's New York City ballet movie. And I was like, that's it. I'm going to be a ballerina like Mary-Kate and Ashley. And my mom smartly was like, let's hold off and see whether that sticks. And then I saw her start taking Irish dancing and I loved it. So she taught me my first moves, got me into a school that was in Spokane. The energy and the hopping was just contagious for me. I just loved it. I didn't want to stop. So I kept dancing at the school. I competed and ended up kind of going up through the ranks to be a champion level dancer. But the school I was at was also really heavy into performance. So I got a lot of opportunities to perform. Looking back, I think I took it for granted because they had a band that was actually the brother of the teachers. There's Claire Worley and Caitlin Tresser, and Caitlin was my main teacher. But their brother, Milad, actually has the band Andjokis, or he's part of that. And so we grew up dancing live to them all the time.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, and now I'm like, I wish my students had more of those opportunities. It was just really fun, and you got to kind of learn how to perform with a band, how to work with them from a young age. So love the performance, love the competition. My teacher also let me teach. I think I shared with her at a pretty young age that I thought I wanted to teach. My family's like has a background of teachers. Like my dad's an English teacher, and then grandparents, like there's just a lot of teachers in my family. So I don't think it's kind of as rare, but I loved the idea of teaching dance and just being able to help a dancer like learn a new skill or grow in their own ability And so she, at a really, at my young age, allowed me to teach classes, which I'm really thankful for. So when it was time to think about going to colleges, I had a lot of, I mean, every senior has a lot of decisions to make of what they want to do. Especially if you are dancing, you know, there's that kind of either you're going to be done or you're going to keep going. And what are you going to do as you keep going on? And I knew I wanted to keep dancing. I knew I wanted to teach. And I had heard about the University of Limerick. I'd actually been able to tour it for the degree in Irish music and dance, which I think now is called BA in dance. I think they changed the titles of
There's
it.
There's been a lot of changes since we've been. For anyone who doesn't know, Lauren and I met at the University of Limerick.
Yeah.
So yeah, there have been some changes, but.
But it's generally the same. Yeah. So, and that was, it was pretty much the only school that you could get a BA in Irish music and dance in. And I wanted to keep dancing, but I was kind of divided in what I wanted to do. So I knew I wanted to dance. So I was thinking I'd go to UL, get the Irish music and dance degree, or I would go the route of actually getting a history degree and going and working in a museum field. But I had a moment in senior year, we were actually on a retreat, which was very thankful now actually for this retreat. And there was a lot of time to just reflect. And in it, I thought, I think I'm going to regret not going to UL and taking that chance and just doing it. So I did, but going into that, I had a plan. I knew I would do my Irish music and dance degree. I wanted to get my teachers, but then after it, I knew I would do a master's in history, which ended up turning into museum studies later. But I knew what I wanted out of it, which I would personally, and I'm not sure your thoughts on this too, Courtney, I would recommend that for any dancer going into UL for Irish music and dance. It's a wonderful degree, but I think you need to know what you want out of it.
I agree. And so many people don't really know what they want out of it.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I'm like you. I went in with a plan. I'm like, I'm going, I'm getting my teachers, I'm becoming a better dancer, I'm learning all the things, I'm meeting all the people, and then I'm coming home and opening a school. And that's what I did. But like for you, you're like, okay, I love Irish dancing, but I also love history. And like, I might want to work in that field. Like, how do I do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And so I kind of had a plan charted out for what I wanted to do. And I followed that. When I was at UL, I ended up transferring schools, which wasn't because I didn't like the school I was dancing with. I think it's a really big decision when you're actually choosing to transfer, especially when you love the school that you're with. But I knew for geographic reasons, if I wanted to keep competing, which I did, it's just easier to have a teacher there. And so I ended up transferring to the Fleming Ball School under Linda, which I know, Courtney, you had danced with Linda as well.
Yep.
And I ended up going to Worlds for solos and teams with her, which was really fun. And then I got to teach with her on my third year. When you do a UL your third year, you do that co-op or like a work placement. So I ended up teaching with Linda and studying for my teachers at the same time. I was also really thankful because I think it was the year prior to that they held, which actually I think, Courtney, was when you took your teachers, they held the exam in Limerick.
Yes, I did take it that year.
Yeah. And Linda knew I was going to take mine. And so she actually said to me, she was like, you should go dance as one of the dancers for when they're teaching, the candidates are teaching. And that was so helpful. And I think if anybody ever has that opportunity and the exam's in your area and you're thinking about it, like it's really helpful to kind of be able to see the backside of it and also get a view of like, okay, this is what the exam's going to look like when you have to teach. It was just helpful because I knew what the environment would be. I saw what I thought went well or didn't go well for people taking the test, which was really helpful because it just kind of, it's like a practice, like you get all kind of some tips before you're going to go in and take it.
Yes. And it's like the only look behind the curtain you can ever have until it's you doing your exam. And it's funny that you talked about this because New England is running an exam in Boston this weekend at the time of recording. And we were telling our dancers the same thing, like, hey, you have your grades done, like you need to go and do this because why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's such a helpful experience because you really won't get that time until you're actually in your exam. So I'm really very thankful that that timing worked out. So I did take my exam my third year, which was a lot. I remember.
Yeah, I don't know how you did that.
I don't know if it was the best decision for my own mental health, but I was like bound and determined. I'm going to do it then. I remember Linda had actually said to me, she was like, if you do this, something's going to suffer, like either your school or the exam. And I don't think my schooling suffered too much, but I think my love of dancing did a little bit. I think I just got a bit burned out.
Makes sense.
So I was like, yeah, it's a lot to study for and still be, you know, doing everything else. So then when I got to my fourth year, I was thinking about like what master's I'd be going into, where I wanted to be. I had actually decided I did want to return back to the US, which was, I think, a shock to my parents because I had always wanted to just stay in Ireland. That's, I thought I'd always be there, but I decided, no, I think I want to come home. And I had a great mentor kind of in the museum field that I got to intern under, who had actually said for what I wanted to do in that field, I should not get a master's in history, but actually get a master's in museum studies, which was really great advice. And I'm so thankful for that. So I had applied to the University of Washington's museology master's. That's what they're like, one of the only universities that calls it museology instead of museum studies, which is super confusing for anyone else not in the field. And so I ended up getting put on a wait list, but then I was accepted later. And so I was back in Washington State and I decided that I would start my school during my master's to kind of be able to build it up as something to kind of have something that maybe a little bit larger once I was done with my master's. At this time as well, right before I left to go home, I got engaged with my now husband. And so we were planning on spending those 2 years apart simply because US visas are tough. And so we were going to get married in 2 years then when I was done with my master's, and then he was going to move over. So the master's was a little bit tough. You know, it was a long distance relationship when you're engaged, which is always a little bit challenging, but also gave me some time to start my school and start building it up. And so kind of started it as, multiple locations. That was a bit of the model of like, we'd have multiple kind of towns. Seattle's really big, so there's lots of kind of various towns that encompass like the greater Seattle region. And I was kind of modeling it after more what teachers in Ireland do. They like teach a lot of village halls. So that was initially the model that I was kind of building off of. And then I graduated from my master's, started at a small art museum, and my husband moved over, which was great. And then the school was building and it was all going really well. And then COVID hit.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. But the one part I'm thankful for is because I had that model of we were in multiple locations, I didn't own or like exclusively rent or have a lease on any facility. And so I never had to carry rent when we went virtual, which was just, it was a, you know, I'm very thankful for it, but
yeah,
it was hard.
Blessing.
Yeah. Cause I didn't have to worry about that financial part of it, but the school was just building the point. We had like a good crop of advanced dancers, like novice dancers and beginner dancers. And I'd say we lost most of the beginner dancers just because there were kids who didn't know how to hit the leave button, you know, right, on Zoom, like they can't read. So we lost out a bit on that. And then coming out of COVID changed the model a little bit just because of necessities. Washington State had pretty tight restrictions when we were returning from COVID. So we ended up renting, it was a Masonic Temple Hall actually, which was super big, really lovely space to be in. But with the restrictions, the class sizes had to be like super tiny. So it took us a while to kind of build that back up, but we built back up, ended up getting our own studio later. And here we are. And then we opened a location in Missoula. And then professionally, I changed jobs two more times, switched to another art museum, and now at the zoo.
Yeah, I think working at the zoo is so cool. And I never thought of a zoo as like a living museum, but it's so true. And now I'm like never going to be able to go to a zoo without thinking that again.
They're fun. And I will say too, every animal has a name. So I felt like when I moved to the zoo, I not only had to learn like staff names, but then you have like all the hundreds of animal names that you learn too. So it's kind of fun though, because you get to meet a lot of things. And we say it's hard to have a bad day at the zoo because you could just walk out and go see a giraffe or something.
I mean, that's true. I mean, so I love like how you've been able to marry all of these different interests and passions that you have and be able to do them all really well. I think it's incredible. Now, you're also a mom now.
Yes.
You said your daughter is like a year old.
She's 10 months.
Okay, so you're still in like the thick of having a baby stage.
Yes. Yeah.
How on earth have you done all this?
Yeah. I almost take a break because it's a lot. I guess the easiest way to say is I just do it, and I kind of, I'm very organized in some ways. But I love it. Like, and I will say the unique position of a teacher in a dance school is that there's so many families, and I think I learned from kind of an early stage, it's okay to ask for help. And everyone is so excited. Like, I have some dancers that just love to see her. Her name's Saoirse. And just are so excited to be around her and help out. And I never want to like obviously be a burden to them or anything. But there's a lot of scheduling that goes into it, but it's so enjoyable, and it's really fun because she loves watching dancing. At a recital, my husband was there, and then my mom was actually holding her. And she said during one entire piece, Saoirse made her jump her, like bounce her to the beat of the music for the entire time. And my mom was like, this is great, but like, I can't do this for the whole show. We can't keep this up. But so I had her in April. She was an Easter baby. She was actually born on Easter Sunday.
Oh, cool.
And that was her due date, which was incredible because it's kind of rare for a baby to be born just right on time. Good timing to start with.
Good timing, yeah.
But it worked out because we had just come out of St. Patrick's Day season. So it was like,
oh my gosh, I cannot even fathom doing St. Patrick's Day season, like 9 months pregnant.
Yeah, it was,
oh my,
I guess I just never stopped. Like, I just kind of kept myself dancing and like standing up. So my body was kind of used to it. I think the part that got to me at the end was my ankles would really swell up. And I hated that because I'm proud of what I call my Irish dancer calves. And I feel like every time I go to the doctor's house, she's like, how do you feel? And I was like, good, but my ankles and my feet are swollen. Please make this stop. But the only part that became a little bit stressful, I mean, there's multiple times I was stressful, but prior, I think it was about 2 months before I was due, the Masonic Temple talked to us about our flooring situation, because we would roll out Marley and they didn't have many renters, so we would actually be able to leave it down,
which
for
is
most
so nice
of the time. Yeah, really thankful for that. But the rental coordinator came in to me one day and he was like, so excited, we put up online that we are available for rent and a lot of people are interested. I'm like, congratulations, that's wonderful. And then he says, that means you're gonna have to roll up your Marley and put it in the closet like after every class. And I looked at him, I'm like 7 or 8 months pregnant at this point. And I'm like, number one, I can't keep rolling and pulling this up. Like, this is going to be too much for me at this point. Two, I did have teachers lined up while I was on maternity leave, which I'm thankful for. I did take a bit of maternity leave. But I was like, I can't expect them to come early, roll out this Marley, pull it back up. It's such a waste of tape when you're taping that down all the time. And I was like, we can't do that. So I thought we're going to have to look for a new space. So that's actually how we ended up finding our own studio space, because I had it kind of in our like long range plan for us to find, but rent is so expensive in Seattle. But we ended up finding this really wonderful space that used to be a dance studio and super reasonable rent. So we ended up moving there. But yeah, so we found a space, but I was, you know, by the time we're moving in, like 8, 9 months pregnant, I think there's a photo of me out front of the studio, very, very, very pregnant. And they opened the first classes was actually once I started maternity leave. So I didn't even have our first classes myself in our studio, but that was okay. It was great to have our own space. And then I did take some maternity leave, obviously with being the one who's kind of like running payroll and answering emails and making sure kind of all the logistics are running together. I didn't really get a break from that. However, I was really thankful for that because I'm used to being really busy. And when I had Saoirse, it was like, it's such a wonderful experience. You have this new little baby that you love so much, but all of a sudden I'm looking, I'm thinking, okay, so she's awake and I change her diaper and I feed her and then she's asleep. And it's just like, I'm so used to having so much happening that for my own mental health, actually having some of the studio things to keep doing was really helpful. And I'm one of those people that I think about a week after I had given birth, like I was going to the store and I even had someone mention to me in the store, she was like, oh, you know, in some other countries, women get full breaks. And I was like, yeah, but I want this. Like, I need this. Like, this is actually good for my mental health, is actually being out. So I know everybody, you know, has very different stories of like birth experiences and things of recovery, but it was very helpful for me to have the dance school to kind of keep some part of like what I was doing still there for myself.
Yeah, like your normal schedule and routine to an extent, but kind of rest from the teaching part.
Yes, exactly. And then we've just been, you know, scheduling everything. I think this year the classes, it's a little bit different with, well, I've noticed like, I want to be home more. I want to be home to put her to bed and be present. And so I actually have a teaching assistant now who helps out with some more of the classes. And I think it's just kind of placing more boundaries around family time, which isn't something that I'm perfect at. It's actually something that my husband and I had talked a little bit more about, like, okay, we, you know, he has a job where he works from home. He started his own business too. And so he's like, if you're gone for a day or you're doing work for the day and then you go off to teach, it's a lot of hours that, you know, he's just kind of on his own. And so of kind of making sure like when you're done teaching, you're done teaching. If you're done work, you're done work, and then it's family time, and being able to kind of switch on and off a little bit more with that. And I think that's like a constant learning process, but it's something that I'm sure even with any position that you're in with the school, it can become 24/7, but I think it's making sure you kind of carve out time of like, nope, that's my personal time.
Yeah, right. No matter how much you love to do the work and be busy, it's still very healthy to step away.
Yes. Yeah. And your own mental health improves too, because you're able to give more when you have a break.
Yeah, no, that was really interesting to hear, like, your perspective on integrating Saoirse into, you know, what you do at the school. And I think it'll be really helpful for anyone who I think is a little nervous about what that could look like one day.
So, yeah, I will say you have a lot more babysitters than a lot of other parents.
Very true. So most excitingly, I think, you know, not that anything can top Saoirse, but really exciting inside your business, you've expanded into Montana, which yeah. I think is so, so cool. So tell us kind of how that happened, and then also what it's like managing locations that are in different states and relatively far apart. Like, I'm guessing you don't take regular jaunts out to Montana.
Yeah, so I do go out about monthly, since it is a short flight from Seattle, short and, you know, what's relative in the U.S.
So right.
An hour flight. But yeah, it was more of just an opportunity that was provided to me. And I think there's a lot of situations with running a business where I think you can plan ahead. You have like, I'm going to do this. Like, I'm going to get a studio in 2 years. I'm going to do this and this. And sometimes an opportunity is just presented to you, and it's whether or not you choose to take it or not.
I agree.
And this one was presented to me. I had actually just changed jobs from a small art museum where when I was hired, there were a total of three of us running an entire art museum. I switched to the zoo, which has hundreds of employees. And so my mental capacity, I had a lot more all yeah. of a sudden, because I wasn't doing like within one museum, three. I think I was working jobs in education, marketing, and development. That was my role, which are basically, I look now at the zoo and there's full departments around all of those, which is just a different situation. And so it was somebody reached out to me who I knew through kind of my own dance network here in Seattle, that there were a couple teachers who were looking for a TC. And basically she just said, would you ever be interested in teaching in Montana? I, at this time, honestly had no idea where in Montana, and Montana's a big state.
Huge state.
Yeah. And I think I talked to my husband at the time and I was like, well, what do you think? And he was like, well, Montana sounds cool. He, and I will say this because he's Irish and coming over here, he loves like the idea of Texas, super excited that the Nationals are in Texas here. He's like, we're gonna go to a rodeo, we're gonna do all of those things. But so he was like, you know, okay, yeah, we, you know, see what it is, see see what this opportunity is. And so I spoke with the individuals who were interested in having a TC, and they were teachers that had taken a break and were interested in starting their own school. And they were, since none of them were certified, they were looking for the certified, the TCRG, to basically oversee it, but also to help provide them more guidance on for advanced dancers and giving them kind of that support that you, the experience that a TCRG may have a bit more of. And they're really wonderful dancers. They're lovely people. And so I spoke with them and I had thought about it beforehand because I've heard of other schools having other locations or TCRGs kind of signing off on other schools throughout this area. I mean, because the Western region, especially, like, we're a huge region. There's a lot of space. There's a lot of small towns. So it's not like completely uncommon here. And I had thought about it. I said, I don't want this to be a situation that it's me personally as like Lauren Carol Bulger, the TCRG, signing off. I thought, I want to be able to provide guidance, but I also want it to be that they're a part of the Carol Henderson School and that this is bigger than just me as an individual, that this is a school. Growing up in Spokane, the school I was with, the Heron School, they actually had two locations. They're both sisters taught and it's like Spokane and then a little bit more up north. And it was so fun when we got to like do things together with the two locations. And I remember as a kid, it was so fun. We would sometimes travel to the other one. We had like studio sleepovers and I loved it. And so that memory just came back of like how special of an experience was that for me when it wasn't just one person signing their name saying, here's the steps. I gave you the choreography. I'm going to come in one or two times, provide you help. So that's kind of what my idea behind it was. And talking with them, I presented this and they were interested in my background, what I had to offer, kind of the values of the school. The Carol Henderson School, I always say we teach traditional, artistic, and competitive because it's really important for me to just give as holistic of an education as possible. I love hearing what you've been doing, Courtney, with like choreography. Like that's really important to me too, of like teaching that artistic element of the dance as well to the kids. And so they were interested in it. And so we kind of developed a model where I give them my curriculum. So I have a set curriculum for the school. I provide kind of training plans of overall lesson plans to help. And I come out then once a month in person, except for obviously March. March is like a no-go for obviously St. Patrick's Day and other reasons. And then December is another month I don't go out, but I still come out all the other months and then be able to help watch the students, provide guidance, and then also Zoom in some of the classes. So that's kind of the model that I presented. They're a part of our school. The kids all, you know, you wouldn't necessarily know whether the student was from Missoula, Montana, or whether they were from Seattle. I hope to have them, you know, just kind of be all as one in one school and have a great experience. I had actually also talked with the teachers too at the time, because I said, you know, it is an expense to have a TCRG, to be basically hiring out a TCRG to join your school. And I said, you're just starting this. Like, is this something you actually really need right now? And they actually had some dancers who were hoping to kind of take their dancing to the next level and felt that it was their time to transfer. And so they actually did have some dancers that were competing, some that were in more of the kind of prelims or edging towards prelims level. So they did have dancers that want to keep competing, which is why I thought, okay, it makes sense, because I also want to give them that guidance too of like, I'm not here just to make money off of this. And obviously if I were here to make money off of it, I would just be like, sure, hire me out. But I know that it's hard starting a school. You have to build a base. You can't. Yeah. And having an additional overhead of a TC, that is an expense. And I'll also say, just like, because I know you talk a lot about business models here too.
Yes, I was general, just about finance. To ask.
Yeah. So I will share what our kind of general agreement is. It's actually a profit share. So I provide not only the choreography, curriculum, and steps, but I run the website. So all that's under me. Marketing is still under me. Advertising, like our Dance Studio, we use Dance Studio Pro. So our CRM management system, the tuition, I kind of have all of that systems in place and kind of have that administrative aspect as part of what I offer to them as being a part of the Carol Henderson School. So I oversee all of that part of it. And so it's a profit share. So I take a percentage of their overall profits into. So it's not having for them at least to be, you know, saying, okay, Lauren's coming to town again, or one of the TCs, if we ever had more TCs, and we're going to have to fork out however much, you know, travel, accommodations, time, et cetera. So it's a little bit of a different model, but I also like it because then I think I'm giving them more. In that way, it's not just my time when I'm coming out, it's trying to be more consistent.
Right. Because providing... in a profit share, when everyone does better, everyone wins versus, you know, hey, I just come out every once in a while, you pay me for my time, and then good luck to you, see you in a month.
Yes, exactly. And I think there's also more incentive for me to really be there for the students. You know, regardless, of course, I absolutely care for these kids too and their well-being and how like their well-being in terms of dancing and how they're doing, and I check in on them, so we have conversations about like how all the kids are doing, you know, any challenges that are coming up. So I'm kind of there as the person who has you know, a bit more experience of just being able to provide that guidance, but also keep things following like my vision for the school and how I intend for Irish dancing to be taught under the Carol Henderson name, which is also why I think it was important for me to have it under the school's name rather than me as an individual, because I also view it as there's more legacy and long-term there too.
Totally. I mean, and I think you were kind of just about to touch on it. Like you mentioned earlier that if you had all the kids together, you wouldn't know necessarily who was a Seattle student and who was a Montana student, which is incredible and a true testament to your leadership and your integrating these new teachers and, you know, giving your program and curriculum to them and them doing a really good job passing it on. Do you have any tips for people in your position or maybe people that are, you know, trying to start a new location but aren't going to be there all the time in how to make that happen successfully?
Yeah, I think first of all, it just comes down to it's a partnership. It's not you as the individual giving everything. I think you have to think about the people, your teachers, the people you are working with. They are part of your team. And it's really learning to work with them and also draw upon their strengths. And then being able to share like what your style preference is for moves. You know, there was a lot of, for us, like especially within teams dancing, there are some things that stylistically I appreciate more, or that is my style for it, that it's kind of teaching that of like, this is what stylistically my viewpoint is for what we dance, and being able to share that clearly. And then I think it's just consistent check-ins and giving them that guidance. It's not going to be a hands-off situation. You're not going to be able to just show up once a month and expect for all of it to happen. Like you're there as a partner with them, helping them out when they need help, and working with them. And I think it's also recognizing your teacher's talents too and working with that. So I also know that the teachers that are in Missoula care so much about their students and are so positive and are like their best cheerleaders ever. And for those kids, that's what they really needed as well. Like just for their development of where they were going to go and what they want to achieve, they really needed that. And so it was kind of bolstering that up and being like, this is a wonderful offering that you were able to give them. And so it's working with that. But I think it also comes down to, you have to know who you are as a school and what your values are and what your style is too, and steps. And I think if you're not really confident about like what you stand for as a school, then it's harder to obviously bring in something else that would kind of align with that if you're not confident on who you are too.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And Carol Henderson is now approaching or maybe celebrated 8 years of business.
Yeah. Yeah. You had actually said that. And I was like, Yeah, we are at 8 years, which is amazing. We made it. We got through COVID and we are growing. Yeah, 8 years.
It's incredible. I mean, I think it is really important to celebrate all of, you know, those things along the way. So what are some of the things you're most proud of?
Yeah. So I think some of them that I'm most proud of are actually moments where it was clear that the values and what I was intending for the school are actually a part of the school, because you set these out. Like, for me, community is really big. And I know that a lot of dance will say that, but it's very important to me, and just the friendships, because I think there's so much that you can get out of Irish dancing apart from Irish dancing, which I actually wrote in my thesis for UL for the fourth year. And you write a thesis. It was actually what values dancers get out of Irish dancing apart from just the skills. And so those were things I've always been on the back of my mind. But some of them that have come out is, I had heard some parents talk about that regardless of our dancers competing against each other, they still remain friends. And I've seen this, and I know that sounds like, well, of course they're friends, but that is actually so challenging in many ways for dancers to remain friends when you are competing against that person, especially when you're within the same school, because you're all trying to do well. You're all trying to place, you're all trying to kind of be better yourself. And when you're, it's, you know, sometimes it's nice when you're in the studio day to day and you can push each other, but for that competition not to get in the place of your friendship, I think that was really important for me to see and to hear that that was working, and that those kids are still really great friends. They're not being in any way kind of pitted against each other or resentful. They're there for each other. I'm so proud of that. And we've actually worked a lot on this last year of like being each other's cheerleader. I love watching gymnastics.
Me
and so,
too.
Yeah, it's so fun. I really enjoy it. But what I noticed, especially in the college, and they talk about this, of like the gymnasts that went from collegiate to elite, that they bring such like a positive energy to elite all of a sudden, because in the collegiate gymnastics, they're like all cheering for each other and going for it.
And it's starting to change the dynamic of elite gymnastics as a whole.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So I actually talked to my kids about that, and I was like, competition is a challenging situation. Like, everyone's going to have some nerves to some point, or you're really nervous, you need more help, etc. Like, you're all going through your own things when you're competing. You are all here together and you should be each other's cheerleaders. So we've actually practiced, and even in our last summer camp, we had like a whole moment where they would all dance and the other kids would sit in the front and just cheer them on the entire time. And then we individually asked the dancers too, of like, okay, when you're competing, every person needs something else. So one person maybe needs to have those people kind of like pumping them up, getting them excited. Another person needs their own quiet space. One needs to maybe running their steps constantly. Like, everybody needs something different. But if you need your friends there cheering you on, share it. And they did. And so even at the last Aractus, we had a moment with a student where I actually said to her, I was like, do you need your friends here right now? And she was like, yes. And so we just sent like a little group message out, and all of her friends came and cheered her on. And it's that moment of just like positivity, knowing they're there. And I'd even heard then from somebody outside of the school that had seen us at a competition, just of like, I've seen how positive you all are. And for me, that's really powerful, because it just means like that support network they have, the friendship, they're there for each other. It's just, it's more.
Yeah,
than
no,
just,
you're proud of the stuff that actually matters, right? Because like teachers could sit here and talk about like how many qualifiers they had or how many this and that, but like the stuff that you're proud of is the things that go so much further beyond that. And like, are the things that are going to stick with these kids the rest of their life, long after they've hung up their shoes, you know, when they've gone on to careers and their own families. And yeah, this is the stuff that matters.
Yeah. And I want to be able to help them and support them through that too. So yeah, I'm very proud of that part. And just the community, like, we had even one family organize for a fesh that was happening here in Seattle, and Missoula families were coming over, and obviously Seattle families were here. They organized like a big boat outing for everyone on one of the lakes here. And so it's nice to see too, that even if I'm not the one instigating it, and doing the work that it happens. They want to get together. They want to be as a community of friends too. So yeah, I think those are.
And I mean, we talked about COVID and just kind of the momentum halt that, I mean, I know I experienced that too, where it just felt like, you know, things are building, things are going great, and then everything comes to a stop. But have there been other challenging moments that have come up in these 8 years?
Yeah, I think when I take time to reflect on most challenging, I think there are parts that I don't expect. Obviously, no one expects COVID to be happening, but apart from that, it's more of like the day-to-day things, especially now having our own studio space. For example, we had our studios had like weird in the back room. This is not where any of the kids are. This is like the little back room that I wanted to use as an office. I think one day I came in, it was after maternity leave, and we had been kind of using it more as storage, but I wanted to clean it out as an office. And I looked at the back door and there was this massive spider around other little spiders and a little round ball. And I was like, I think that's a spider egg. And then I looked up and the whole ceiling had spiders on it. And I was like, absolutely not. All right, I get to deal with this. This is, you know, it's those moments of like, when you think you're going to sign up to be an Irish dance teacher or have a school, and then suddenly you're in a room covered with spiders and you're like, well, this is what I have to deal with today. Followed by like, all of a sudden in that room, our rest of our studio, I am saying our rest of our studio is lovely and clean and beautiful. We've been dealing with this one back room problem where no one else goes. Because the back door goes to like just kind of a yard space that's somewhat unkempt by like all of the other, because there's like multiple tenants in the space. And there were all of a sudden like dead ants all over the floor, but dead. They're not moving. They were all dead. And I was like, this is absolutely bizarre.
Right.
And again, I have to be the one to deal with it, which again, not expected. So I got to deal with that. And then also just, I think, and I say this for any prospective teachers out there, you're going to get weird body functions from kids in the middle of class. I've had multiple, you know, bathroom incidents. In one class, we had a child lose a tooth and throw up. And another child,
I had a projectile vomit a few months ago.
They're things that, again, when you think you're signing up for teaching Irish dancing, you don't expect that you're cleaning up vomit, you're holding a child's tooth that they just lost to the tooth fairy to come, cleaning up pee off the ground. I mean, and I love these kids to death, but like, I say that that's challenging because, I mean, there's of course the day-to-day of like balancing everything, and you know, sometimes there's some more challenging situations, like if there's a family that's maybe having a little bit of an issue with something, or, you know, trying to keep on top of all the organizations there. St. Patrick's Day is super stressful, but I view that as like, I guess I knew about that more coming into it. So it's more of just the logistics of like running a space, and bodily functions of kids I wouldn't have expected. But I do want to also end on like a little bit more of a positive note in that way too, where there was one moment where it was one of our students who had come from Missoula, and it was his first Oireachtas. And it was actually the first Oireachtas where we then had the Missoula students too. And he was doing a trad set, and he came up to me at the end and he handed me a box of chocolates and he said, I am so thankful that you are here, that you as a teacher are here. You know, and it just meant so much to him. And that moment, just, and it will forever stick with me because it meant so much to me, because I had said, I was like, of course I'm here. Like, of course I wouldn't miss this for you. I absolutely wouldn't miss it here. But it also just kind of reinforces like your presence and your commitment to your students. It does mean something to them. And it's just such a powerful little moment. So I'm very thankful for that too. And I'm happy that I was there for him. He did great. So.
No, I love that. I mean, you're an extremely positive person. I think it comes through just even in this short, you know, interview. So I can only imagine, you know, the positivity and the support that you give to all of your students.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm sure some of them will even say, like, my teens, they even commented once, they were like, some of them now help teaching. I have kind of like a, I call it the aspiring teachers program, where like they get to join a class and kind of help lead it. that's the other part. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit off topic, but I will say this: when starting another location, I also kind of gave them some like the program structure that I had. So like we have our little itty bitties class we called our Kaylee Cubs because the school symbol is a lion. So a little Kaylee and a
Oh.
little lion cub. But you know, just kind of following somewhat of a similar structure to how you organize your school. Or organize your, yeah, it's your choice of how you organize your school. So kind of following a similar structure. But so I have these aspiring teachers, and it's funny because they are teens, they're in prelims, they're like working quite hard. But it was funny because they said to me when they're like helping out the class, they're like, you're so sweet to the little kids. And then you're hard on us. I want to go back. I remember when you were so sweet to me all the time. I was like, I'm not mean to you. It's just I can talk to you as an adult and make you, you
yeah,
know?
it's funny. I think we might be similar in that way because I know that I have like high expectations and I will expect that you can act at least your age. So when you start
yes.
to become a teen, you know what the drill is. You've been here a long time. The tolerance level is definitely lower.
Yes.
And yeah, it's not as sweet.
Yeah. 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 You don't get to sugarcoat things quite as much. But they're also so fun. I love working with the teens too, because they're like edging towards adults. So it's just a different situation. And every class they have to tell me the gossip that's happened in their school, which is also hilarious.
Terrifying, right? Terrifying.
Yeah,
I'm learning
yes.
all of the new lingo where I officially feel old.
Yeah. Yeah. I had one dancer who mentioned to me, we were getting ready for grade exams. And she was like, I was up really late. I had a, sleep or whatever. Then she laid down, and this I do have to admit, not a new lingo, just something I didn't know, but she brought it to my attention. She goes, my dogs are asleep. And I was like, your dogs are asleep? Like your dog's at home? Like what does that have to do with doing your grade exams right now? And she's like, my dogs are asleep. Just pointing to her feet, and I'm like, your dogs? And then she's like, my feet. And I was like, oh, your dogs are tired. Okay, all right, I get it. Not too much of a new lingo, just one that I'm clearly unaware of that she brought to attention. But yeah, it's great. We're all having a great time. And I mean, there's definitely a lot to always balance, but I think my advice for anyone doing this is just always consider a partnership. I think in Irish dancing, it's always best if we kind of take our own personal ego out of it, realize that you're existing and you're working for who you're serving. Your community, the students, knowing that that's like number one, and then working more in partnership with the teachers rather than just again saying it's my way or the highway and here's everything I view, and kind of highlighting yourself. Of course, I think there's always places for workshops. I'm not saying that that's not, but I think when you're starting a location, it's just a little bit of a different situation too with that.
Yeah. And I appreciate you being so like transparent and willing to share, kind of the behind the scenes and the business model that you're using. Cause I think it'll just give people food for thought and different options that maybe they hadn't considered before.
Yeah. And sorry, one last thought. I do want to add this in, cause this is a part that we did have to kind of look at for the rules in Irish dancing. Generally a TCRG does have to be present at pretty much all classes. There is an exception if it's like what they consider like a rural or remote location where there's not one within the, I don't think they have like a mileage on it, but within
yeah, they call it like a developing area or something.
Yeah. And that's the case for Montana. Montana is quite large. There are, more schools that are developing in an area, but they're not necessarily nearby Missoula. Because again, it's a very large state, and there are new ones coming in, but there's not another TC kind of residing or AD within that area. So that's how you can, within Irish dancing, work within kind of those structures that it's allowed as a teacher. Yep. Then
I know, and the rules are always evolving and changing and getting updated, so it's important to stay on top of all that.
Yes. Yeah, you have to know all the rules along with your state's rules.
Yeah,
me too. But yeah.
Yeah, well, thank you again for making the time for this. And I just think that you handle and juggle all of this so beautifully.
Oh, well, thank you. It's fun. I enjoy it. I don't regret it in any way too. So, and I can't wait until Saoirse is able to come to classes and she can, that's
it
one
sounds like you're going to be teaching Saoirse her first steps, just like your mom taught you.
Yes. Oh yeah, definitely. She also already knows Vanishing Lake. That's what gets her to sleep. So Maybe
So
not as
funny.
exciting of a set, but yeah.
But yeah, I will leave Lauren's like school website and Instagram or any ways that you can get in touch with Lauren if you want to learn more or just follow along. And all the best to you and Carol Henderson. It's an exciting
Great.
time.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for having me too.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on TCRG to CEO Radio.